Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, Anna. I should have said that first. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. Hi.
Thank you for welcoming me to the show.
Today we're joined by the lovely Olivia Aguilar. She is such a joy. She is part of the iHeart family on the Big Money Player side. We talk about growing up in Michigan in a small town, going to LA, working in live comedy, and finding podcasting.
Yeah. Listen in.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello!
Hi, Shireen.
Hi! What a sight for sore eyes. What a lovely Zoom screen. Just a bunch of nice ladies. I don't know. Ladies. This is something I've said before, but this is the first conversation I've had today. Maybe I'm just overwhelmed with the connection at times.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Feeling really warm and receptive.
I just like didn't care. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry I was late. I'm doing back-to-back recordings always.
No worries. It's the holiday season. You got to churn them out.
Yeah, everyone wants to record before the holidays so they don't have to do anything for 2 weeks, which I can't wait for those 2 weeks where I do absolutely nothing. I don't even fucking open my eyes. That's the plan.
I mean, this is going to come out post-holiday, quote-unquote holiday season and all of that. So
then if anyone's wondering, I'm dead. I'm long gone, bitches. I died. I had so much peace. I could finally, you know, when people are like, I think he had the peace where he could finally go with like older people.
I always imagine that with myself, but with me, I'm like disintegrating. Like I finally am at peace to where my body just like disintegrates into dust. And then I'm like one with the elements, the smog.
I finally had the peace I needed.
Yeah. Anyways,
dark, isn't it?
No, come on. Talking about death is, I'm trying, even though I'm petrified of my loved ones dying, me dying. I have a lot of anxiety about death, and I think I want to normalize it so I don't have that anxiety. Like I want to talk about it enough to where it's like, because really death is the only certainty in life. The only certainty that we can count on is that we die. And it shouldn't be this big, scary thing. This is more for myself than anything else, but I don't want to shy away from some scary subjects, is my point. Anyways, before I make this into a full-on therapy session, I want to bring in our guest. She's a new addition into my life, aka I've just met her a couple minutes ago over Zoom, but I'm really excited to get to know her along with all of you getting to know her as well. It's Olivia Aguilar.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for doing the show. You are a new EP at Big Money Players, which is our like sister company. I don't even know. Basically, it's the imprint comedy network that Will Ferrell made within iHeartRadio. I produce a show for them. You produce all the other shows for them. Because I was brought in to start before you got hired. And then thank God you came in because I was not going to do more shit. I hope Hans never hears this. Sorry, Hans. But he might actually listen because you're on.
I was going to say, I feel like he might hear this.
He might hear it. Hey, what's up,
Hans? He's like the supportive type. Yeah. Hi, Hans. Thanks for being on our show. Come on back.
Hans is, if you guys recall, his former guest and head of content for Big Money Players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hans, can you answer my emails, please?
Hans. I just text Hans everything I need.
This is the emailing only way he'll respond to your emailing, email.
Yeah. Emailing is very, like, 2002. Okay. If you need answers, text.
Yeah. I mean, I'm moving, and you know, like when you kind of have like weird dissolutions with friendships. And there's one in particular, there's like maybe a couple that I've always left like a question mark in my head.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the night, the other night, I was like up and I couldn't go to sleep. So I was like, I'm just going to, cause I've been thinking about one person in particular as I move. I just keep finding like Polaroids or whatever from our friendship together. And I was like up and I was like, I'm just going to write her something. And I might not even send it. It was like in my notes app and I wrote it and I decided the next day that it's like, this is an email, not a text. Like, I think there's a moment where it's like an email versus text. It's like, I appreciate that an email form exists because I don't really need like a response per se. And a text makes it seem like I really do. So yeah, you're right. When you need a response, definitely text. But maybe I'm the email type just because I'm just like, I just want this to exist. You don't have to come back to me if you don't want to. This is more for me than for you.
Yeah, no, totally. I you know what, Shereen, I agree with that too. With text, it's like, if I want the answer ASAP, I want it. An emoji would be great in association with the response. I'm an emoji person, so that'd be great just to kind of sense the urgency. And yeah, and emails is like, okay, you can come and revisit it and you're welcome. It kind of gives like that open doors, like.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And honestly, I'm not an emoji person, but I really appreciated the update with all the like when you press down on the thing and there's like a thumbs up or a heart. Like, I really appreciate that update because it really serves to me being like, I want to tell you I've seen this and I see and I love you, but I'm just at emotional capacity. I cannot physically respond to this. So
yeah.
For me, that's the that's my version of emojis. It's just like tap tap.
Yeah,
I think it's called a tap back. Actually, I just learned that recently. I didn't know that's what it was called. Tap back.
Wow. Speaking of like emojis, do both of you have like an emoji that's like your go to? Like that, you know, when they have like those rows of like your most used emojis. Like, what would you say like your top three are?
Looking at mine, all of mine are the eggplant. No, I'm just joking. I just did the sexual harassment seminar training we're supposed to do.
Oh, I have to do. Thank you for reminding me,
honey. It's 2 hours long, and let me tell you, it has not. It has only made me want to sexually harass everyone around me. No, I'm just joking. Please,
oh my god,
our higher ups, please don't listen to this.
Hans, she's so serious.
Nah, Hans is the homie. No, it looks like I always send the heart. I always send heart because that's a good way to like end a conversation. Like heart, it really gets people to leave you alone. And frequently used is just a green square. I have no memory of ever using that.
That's so interesting. I only have one heart, and it's the one with an arrow through it. And I only use that when I'm like on the EA account on Instagram, and I'm like, thanks for the support, heart. But my other ones are a loaf of bread, which is probably me talking about money. Or wanting money.
Get that bread. Yeah. Clap hands.
I don't have clap hands. I don't have any hands. I do the rocket ship a lot and the moon face looking to the side. Like the one that's like, that's like a moon. But those don't really tell you anything. Like the rocket ship just means like, for me, the rocket ship is like, see you later. But I don't know if that translates.
Bye, losers.
Yeah.
I do a lot of the clap hands. That's one of my big ones. I'll just be like, I agree.
I like the clap hands. Like the clap hands, though. For whatever reason, they're not on my most used. There's some random ones. I don't remember using the pretzel, but it's on here. I didn't know there was a... And the drum.
Oh, you don't remember yesterday one? Calling me a pretzel-ass bitch? Could you imagine?
What a weird insult. I also do the robot very much. The robot... Oh, and the clown. Those are the two faces I like the most. The robot and the clown. And occasionally the sunglasses guy when I'm like, I try so hard to be cool kind of thing.
What are your tops? Yeah, tell us your tops.
Most recently, as I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is very interesting. I have a potato, just a plain old potato.
Oh, I like and the potato.
It's kind of cute, honestly. I look at it now and I'm like, oh, it's adorable. Mm-hmm. It's like just like an oblong round shape and... It's like very inviting. Also, I think like potato is a great name for a pet as well.
100%. I love that name for a pet. I know a little, I think it's a pug named Potato. It's so cute. I just like, it's a great
name. That's such a good name for like a pug.
Yeah. Potato. Yeah, it's a great name. Okay, potato is a great emoji to use. I might put that in my rotation. Not that I use emojis, but potato is a good one to add in.
I always have
and,
to.
I have the flames, which I'm like, I use that a lot, like the fire flames. And I think that can just go for any universal topic where whether it's like someone being whether roasted or like, and another one also being like, oh, that's a good looking person. Flame.
Fire.
All this.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And then my third most used emoji is the facepalm going like this.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
I use that way too often in conversation. And I'm just like, do I need to tell someone something? Or is this, I feel like there, I need to like unpack that facepalm.
Like, being like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I use the facepalm all the time because I'm always like, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, funny. And that's where I feel like, do I need to, I'm currently in therapy and I'm like, do I need to bring this up to my therapist? Just emoji talk of like, oh, am I like showing a lot of self-doubt or like, am I being too mean to myself? But also that's me looking way into an emoji and I don't think that was meant to happen.
But at the same time, like, this is how we're communicating now as human beings. When you say it out loud, it maybe seems silly, but you really are. It's just a way to be introspective and analyze yourself, you know, which I think is helpful to learn more about who you are. My most used face, actually, it started off as ironic because my friend Edgar always uses this one emoji. And I used to only use it when I was talking to him. But it's the one that's just like disappointed. And it's like just like its face is down and it's like a sadness. And I only used to use it like ironically in response to his texts. But now I use it all the time. And when you look at my most used ones, they all look really sad. So it is maybe a reflection of my depression. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't like
But anyways,
that.
Let's talk about
you.
I think we got some good insight from the emoji, to be honest. But let's go deeper. Let's go deeper than emojis.
Where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Michigan. If we need to pinpoint the town, Kalamazoo. And I grew up there and it was fine. It's on the west side of the state. And I'm going to get political, but it's like super red. I remember growing up being a very red area, and a little bit north of us is Grand Rapids. And that was like DeVos country. Like the family is from that area. So any building, hospital, it was always like the DeVos name attached to it. So it was super red-ish growing up. But then luckily the last couple of years, it's been turning blue, which I'm like, hey, that's a good sign of like progress in whatever capacity. And yeah, sorry, that was just right out of the gates being like, oh, it's like a red area. No, but
don't apologize. That's reality.
Is what it is. Yeah.
Also, too, I've had like, you know, like growing up there was quite an experience. My family, we were one of like one of two Mexican American families. Wow. So we grew up in an area that was like, speaking of DeVos, but like predominantly Dutch heritage, a lot of Dutch vibes. Tulip Festival was like something to look forward to. And I'm like, I don't know what tulips are.
That's so interesting.
But it was interesting to grow up there because like being one of the few Mexican Americans in that school district, it was definitely something to learn and also to figure out who you are as women of color, like the identity of trying to fit in and trying to be like a people pleaser 100%. The whole time.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a lot of growing up, was people pleasing just to fit in and to also like get by too.
Yeah.
And again, we mentioned this earlier, this therapy session is like...
Podcast is therapy. Let's be real. This is just a conversation where we can unpack everything that we want to. So don't... Yeah.
For sure.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So what brought your family to that area?
My mom grew up in Texas, and so did my father. And they were migrant workers. Mm-hmm. So... And this is where I like feel sympathy for them, because they're... first generation and myself being second generation, they definitely were laborers by like age 6 and 7, just like working in the fields, in which, you know, I think that goes against some child labor laws, but them growing up there and then every summer having to go to different areas of the United States to pick vegetables and fruit. And my mom told me how much she loved going to Michigan. Mm-hmm. And when she was like applying to schools, she had her heart set for Michigan and was looking to live there. And she went to college over there and she studied nursing.
Wow. That's interesting. She was just drawn to that area because of the work.
The produce, wonderful. Yeah. I think she just loved the scenery there. Mm. From like what I'm understanding, she enjoyed going there for the summers and just found it to be so beautiful. I think in comparison to where she grew up, and mind you, she grew up very poor, and I think this was just a neat way to like get out of her environment for part of the year. And I think she really found like a connection to it.
Interesting.
And it's nice that she was able to get a full ride school, and she really wanted to create a life for herself. And definitely like as she like was raising us, she's like, I want to give you everything that I couldn't have. So if, you know, being familiar with that story of being like, I want the best for you and all this. So she definitely provided that and also like impacted the way that we worked and the ethic to be the best to get what you want.
Right.
Yeah. In life. 100%. I mean, I think that's a common feeling with a lot of children of immigrants. Parents that have struggled so much in life, you see them work so hard for you, and without even knowing it, when you're growing up, it's implemented in you. And if you might try to resist it when you're like an angsty teen, but then you're like an adult and you're like, why do I work so hard? It's like, oh, it's because my parents my parents instilled this in me. It's so wild that children like your parents, especially back then, were working in fields at like elementary school age that should not have been doing that. That is so upsetting because people are in their bubble and they have no idea how people are trying to survive outside of that. How children are subjected to things that like they're not playing outside. They're literally like doing work a grown person should be doing.
Yeah, totally. And like my mom would tell me like that her and her sisters would be like operating like heavy machinery, like like it being 10 years old, 11 years old. And I'm like, no, that seems very dangerous. Just hearing that and even going back to like where my mom, when she wanted me to get a job in high school just to like build up that work ethic. And I went to summer camp and I loved going there and I wanted to be a counselor. But my mom was just like, being a counselor isn't a job. She's like, why don't you go like detassel corn? Now that's a job. Like that's work. Labor. You're sweating the labor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, mom, but I want to like teach kids how to make leather bracelets and shoot an arrow.
Yeah.
And she just was like, not having it, where she's like, no, like I'll allow you to go to summer camp, but there is no career behind becoming a camp counselor.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, she's not wrong. You could be a professional camp counselor for the rest of your life, but then after a while you'll be like, god damn those kids. I assume you just get more craggy the more you have to deal with kids. But I mean, actually some people are built to interact with kids, like literally teachers.
Right. Yeah.
Especially now, like when you watch those videos of the teachers like teaching
getting
over Zoom
and stuff. Yeah.
Or not even just being teaching over their Zoom, and they just have to be so like just to keep like a second grader's attention. It's like so much of like holding stuff up because they're like, I don't, you know, like children, right? They're just like in their own world. That it's like that's so much. Like I can barely bring the energy needed today to do a podcast. Like I am truly like on the edge of falling asleep at all times doing a job that whatever, you know, it's not that hard. I just sit at a computer screen, but like it's unbelievable. And it's like tough to be like, you have to know you're that type of person.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can't be one of us who are like, you know,
that
side.
Totally.
That side. Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to be a certain person to really take on that job. And the kids, I have a friend who's a teacher, and the tactics and stories he tells of like how to get their attention is mind-boggling, where he making noises to be like, hey, kids, right here, right here, like pay attention. And some of these kids are just like, all right, I'm going to tune in and see what happens. And one time my friend said one of his students like tuned in, and literally the kid just was like in a robe, like just like slumped over, just like looking at the laptop, like as if she just had like the longest day of work ever, and just like slumped over being like, what's this, why do I need to attend this?
Can't imagine what a time to be alive. Really, should bizarre. We take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these quick, important sponsors. And we're back. We are here with Olivia Aguilar. Yeah. Is it Aguilar? Did we say that wrong?
Oh. Aguilar.
Okay. Or what did I say?
No, you said it correctly.
Oh, okay.
And I know living in Los Angeles, where a lot of people predominantly speak Spanish, I'll say Aguilar, and some people will be like, Aguilar, you mean Aguilar? And I'm like, yes, it is.
Yeah. Right. Well, I wanted to ask you about that. So you grew up being one of two, like very minimal Mexican or like just Latino influence. And I want to ask you about when you moved to LA, and also like, was that interesting for you being so surrounded by like Mexican culture and just like Latino culture here?
Yeah. I mean, making the decision to move to Los Angeles was definitely based on my college experience. I wanted to work in entertainment, and it was between New York and Los Angeles, and I was too scared of New York. So LA was the option to do. Being in that in Los Angeles, I'm really glad to see there's so much like Mexican and like Latinx culture around where I didn't have that as much growing up. Mind you, like I had that whenever I was with around family, but that was traveling. That would be either going to like Chicago or Houston to really be introduced to Latin culture. And it was nice making that move to LA to be like, oh, I see people who look like me, sound like me, and it's just kind of refreshing in that way. Mm-hmm. And even growing up in Michigan, it was in specifically my hometown, it's like I was like distinctly different compared to all the kids around me who were like white, blonde hair, blue-eyed Dutch kids.
Wow.
and just like kind of sticking out as a sore thumb. So even going back to like being like, I just wanted to fit in, I just wanted to pass. And I think that led to like kind of like a weird strive for perfection, I guess you could say, is one of the things I'm trying to work on. And even just to get by, because mind you, this is back then, this is a town who wasn't exposed to a lot of culture. So I'm sure, not speaking for the whole town, but I'm sure stereotypes like came into place anytime there was a big focus on my family. Mm-hmm. And so just having to really strive to get all A's and like to not be pregnant as it like teen pregnancy was a big thing. And I think that definitely influenced a lot, or even college too. Like I had some like former classmates who were surprised that I was going to college. They're like, what? You going to college? What?
It's
what?
So
oh my God.
I know. And I would get even some where they're like, oh, they only accepted you because you are Mexican American. Naturally. And it was just definitely a roller coaster to be in. And especially going back to like teen pregnancy, a lot of my cousins, and I don't know, looking back now, I don't know if it was a tactic my mom tried to use to kind of like put us in line. She would just be like, you don't want to be pregnant. You don't want teen pregnancy, like your cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's like happened. And it's just looking back, I just don't know if that was a way to kind of being like, keep us on our toes. But also, we're Catholic as well. So that was just a whole, that's a whole nother subject there where it's like, strict Catholicism and just being afraid of like sex and sexuality, essentially. So yeah. That was definitely used in that source. And like with some family members going through that, having teen pregnancy, that was just definitely like kind of the scare. And weirdly, that was like just another thing to add on top, being like, okay, like I can't be sexually active or I'm going to end up like pregnant and all this. So it was just a way to kind of like line in that perfectionism and striving for like good grades and all that. So it was a looking back now, it's like I just put way too much pressure on myself just to get by this, like a lot of my former classmates. And would I have to think of that if I lived in like a big city or like a city that had more diversity in it? And in the future, I do want kids, but I want to make sure they are in an environment where there are like kids from different backgrounds, also kids from different socioeconomic backgrounds, and exposing that so they don't end up being like weirdly oblivious like I was.
Mm-hmm.
I think back on some stuff where I was like so embarrassed that I even like crossed my mind. Like my best friend, she has alopecia. And I had no idea what alopecia was until I went to college and met her. And then I'm like, what? People can just be bald and that's a condition? And like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I hope when I'm family planning that I expose my kids to like different people, different ideas, different cultures and all that, just because I didn't have that growing up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, I think that's like, I mean, to speak to like what you had to go through, it's like you're kind of forced to become this model minority. And I felt that a lot of the time too, you know, just the pressure from my family and the school and just, you know, society around me. I believe it was harder for you because this country has such a fucked up view of what it is to be like Latino, which is, you know, luckily I'm Iranian. And, you know, for most of my growing up, no one knew what Iranian even meant. Until 9/11, then I was a terrorist. But like, I can't imagine what it's like to also have that other layer of like, because people are so familiar with Mexico or with Latinx culture, yeah, that like, they just stereotype you so hard. Like the fact that they would be like, you're going to college, it's like, yes, motherfucker, I'm a person. Like, what do you fucking mean? Like, who cares? Yeah. Also on top of that, who cares? Like, it's none of your business anyway. If you chose not to go to college, it doesn't mean you're anything other than a person who's choosing not to go to college. Like, it just is what it is. It fucking sucks. Being a person of color in this country fucking sucks. As much as this is like the American dream,
the American dream is shit show. It's about capitalism and death. Like, that's the American dream.
Yeah. I do want to ask, how did your dad have the same motivation to go to Michigan? Was it similar to your mom's?
I'm not sure if it was like necessarily similar. He had a very rough childhood. So I think he just wanted to get out.
Okay.
And this was an option to get out. And that's something to revisit and ask him. But yeah, I just knew he wanted to be out of his hometown, just wanted to get out and all that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have an older sister who's a doctor. And she's just killing it. She's helping underserved communities with family planning and all that. Mm-hmm. So I give her a shout out here. And then I have a younger sister who's a teacher in South Korea. And then wow. I have a younger brother who he lives in Michigan and he's currently looking at like grad schools and
nice.
Looking to apply. But
similar to, I have two sisters, I'm in the middle, so it's a little similar. And my older sister is a doctor, so kind of similar. But that because I also can relate to kind of growing up a little sheltered and learning a lot of things later in like my late teens and college, early 20s. Like I just grew up sheltered. But my sisters, my older sister in particular, because she was closer in age to me than my little sister was, a lot of the times we only kind of had each other and we only kind of understood each other. Was that like your experience too?
Yeah, definitely. That was like a very similar relationship with my older sister and I.
Yeah. It's just all you have to hold on to each other. And like, there are so many things still that like only we understand because like, or we think only we understand. It's just like about our shared experience.
Yeah, definitely. Because like even my sibling, my younger siblings and I are like almost 5 years apart. And my older sister and I are 1 year apart. So mm-hmm. we definitely have that shared like being understanding and just what we went through in our like whole life yeah. and even in school, too. And like, yeah. And she was definitely like a good guiding force of like what to do in like high school, because she kind of like sort of prepared me, being like, hey, like kids are going to be assholes to you in high school. And, you know, they're going to be jerks to you because you're a woman, you're a Mexican woman, like just be ready for that. And like, and just, you know, roll with it and like always protect yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm glad you had that. I think being an only child in those circumstances is probably even more difficult. So I look back on some challenging parts of my life, and I'm just glad I at least had like siblings around, because none of my family was around. Like I just had my immediate family. Everyone else was like out of the country. So I think when you have those familial connections, I think it's helpful. So you end up in LA after college.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you study when you were in college?
I studied film and television production and communication studies. The technical term, just because the school I went to, the film and television was called Screen Arts and Cultures, where I'm just like, it's film and television.
Mm-hmm. Very prestige.
Very prestige. I mean, I love the school I went to. I went to University of Michigan, and mm-hmm. it was definitely a big formative of like who I am now.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, that's where a lot of people, I feel, is that college has like helped them shape to like who they are today.
Mm-hmm. Did you know? So you said that you knew that you wanted to get into some type of entertainment field. Why did you know how that passion or desire started and like where it came from?
I mean, I've always enjoyed comedy my whole life. And even my dad and I went to go see George Carlin at like the State Theater in my hometown, like nice. I think maybe a year before he passed. And oh, wow. We've always shared like a common interest in stand-up comedy throughout my life. I just never knew that there could be a career in a sense of like not performing stand-up, but there's other ways to get involved. And I didn't even tap into that in college. Even in college, I was like, oh, I'm going to work in entertainment. I'm going to work in television and I'm going to be a writer. And when you move out to LA and you're just like, I don't want to be a writer, you kind of shift gears and see what else is there. But I've always had a soft spot for live entertainment. And I've always enjoyed going to check out like stand-up shows and even seeing improv shows. So like when I came to Los Angeles and maybe my like second year in, I was like, okay, I need to figure out how to get into the comedy sphere where I don't want to perform, but I do enjoy performances, but I want to figure out what is the way to like better that performance. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to like a lot of people and it just like kind of came down the pipeline. They're like, oh, you want to be like a producer and just like bring out the talent's vision, whether it's like on stage or like in front of a mic. You want to bring out the best performance, and that's just like kind of behind the scenes work. And that's how I got more into specifically what I want to do in comedy, mm-hmm. which is producing comedy content, podcasts, live entertainment, all that stuff.
Nice. Yeah, when I first moved here, like in 2013, Anna was already here and she was like booking comedy shows. She was doing the production side of things for live comedy. And before I knew that, like before I saw Anna doing it, I didn't know that was a thing. Like I didn't know like that, oh, you're a live show producer. There's someone behind the scenes and all of these like open mics or whatever. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think those years that you were focusing on live shows, you kind of like built your community, right? And like it helped you kind of like learn like the landscape of LA too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And even within that, like aside from booking some shows, I was booking one show at Nerd Melt for like a year and a half. And then I really loved stand-up shows, and I was like, okay, I think I want to start a show and do the booking, also host, and I really want to focus in bringing up-and-coming comedians. And that's when I started my own show back then. It's called Cold Cereal. It's currently on hiatus. Obviously, we're in a pandemic. That mm-hmm. is reasons why. And it was just like definitely a way to like kind of create opportunities for you. And I had to create ways to like keep connected within comedy, and then also trying to build that foundation. Like, okay, I want to work in live, but how am I going to do this? I got to figure out how to like book my shows, meet comedians, and like just build that network overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hustle. It really is a hustle. Like, I worked years booking and producing shows and made no money, like, at all. Like, just yeah. had day jobs to pay the rent, and then just kept it moving until one day someone was like, I hire you, which was Jack O'Brien back at Cracked. Was like,
oh, okay.
And that was like a series of comedians recommending me to this job. And then that's how I kind of, you know, I was like interning at Earwolf. It was just like so many odd jobs here and there. I was like producing pilots and for comedians, and then like doing their producing their podcasts, and then like running shows and making maybe like 10 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. But a like lot of the, it is unpaid stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, it is, you're basically being paid in the, I hate to say it, like the connections and the like, just the showing your work ethic is what gets you to where you are, because people go like, oh, Olivia, she fucking works hard. Like, I can trust Olivia, you know, like you're just building your reputation as like someone who can do the work. And that kind of, you know, it's like why you're here today, because they were like, Olivia fucking is killing it.
Yeah.
Bring yeah.
You, just, you have to stick around and keep doing it. I think like that's the mm-hmm. whole trick, is that you just have to keep going and like try to make it work and try to hustle. And I wish it was different as far as financial gain goes, but
yeah
I think it, I think you're right. Exactly. I think it's about building reputation and like comedians even like respecting you and like recommending you to other things or asking you to do something for like to work on their show or whatever. I think that's how you're compensated, and hopefully if it pans out for you, you're compensated eventually in a different way, like money.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very funny because I think we like touched lightly on this earlier, but just like my mom not understanding what jobs are. I think she mm-hmm. still doesn't understand what I do.
No, my parents and have no idea.
Yeah, no clue. And then even just the idea of working like odd end jobs to like get to where you want to be. Exactly. For a while I was working in accounting, and my mom was like, oh great, you're gonna be an accountant, like that seems great, like that seems secure. And I'm like, okay, yes, hear you out, but that's not what I want to do. Actually, I'm working like three shows right now that I really love, and I'm not getting paid, but the compensation is the connections and contacts. And I remember my mom being like,
okay. I know. Okay. Isn't that conversation the worst? They're like, okay, but like, does it come with health insurance? And right. you're like, well, not really, right. but maybe one day.
Exactly. Yeah. So definitely it was kind of a trying, it's a constant trying to prove yourself, being like, I promise this is going to yeah. work out. Like, I know our parents always want the best for us, but you also are like, hey, like, trust me. Like, I am smart. I am yeah. a hustler. I can get these things done, and it's going to get to well, the yeah. path where I want to be.
A lot yeah. of it is being like convincing them like, hey, remember how you broke me with my work ethic? I think I'll be okay. Yeah, you know, like, hey, remember when you like you told me that working as a summer camp is not good enough and made me go, you know, work actual a laborious job? I think I can handle it. You know, it's so much of like trying to convince them like, no, like, you made me, remember? I'm tough. There's a reason I just went to LA. Like, a lot of people don't just leave their hometown and fly across the country and be like, I tried to make it. Like, it's hard. It's really hard to establish yourself. And the fact that you have is like, it's all the more like, you know, example of like how they raised you. Like, it shines brighter on them that you came out here and now have a career. It's like, look, you did it. You taught me everything I needed to know. And now I'm here and I'm, Got health insurance. That's all. My parents only care about health
insurance. Yeah, I was going to say, the big proof is like, hey, I can go to a hospital now and I won't pay as much. The bill is still going to be big, but I won't pay as much.
I do want to say also, a part of the like working, producing comedy is like building your ability to recognize talent, which I think means a lot in this industry. Like, I booked, you know, I booked many shows over the years, but the one show I did was Comedy Palace, which was in the attic of the Palace Chinese restaurant, where it was weekly. And I did it for 2 years and I booked like 7 to 8 comedians a week. And that strengthened my ability. Like, one, I watched so much fucking stand up to a point where, you know, like you can predict how people's like pacing is. Like, I became so ingrained in like the pacing and the wording and how stand-ups where I'd be like, that's a joke comedian, that's a story comedian. Like, it got, I was so in it that I could break down like every aspect of comedy, like stand-up comedy, not really like improv or anything like that, but like this, I got so used to it. I'd be like, that guy's gonna be huge, that guy, I don't know, this guy, like this girl, like it just got to a point where I was like a talent maniac because I was constantly doing it. Like, I was constantly surrounding myself with stand-up, and it's like that was my currency for this industry. It's like, I can watch someone stand up and tell you where they'll be in a few years. Like, I have mentally, literally went into like a almost boot camp of understanding talent and like how this industry works. And that was like, that was my, truly, like, to this day is still kind of my currency of like booking Daily Zeitgeist. Like, I know who can do this show and I know who wouldn't like this show and I know who would like what show and I know who would not really care for the. It's like my whole brain just works like that now, where I'm on Twitter being like, book them. I know they only have 9,000 followers, but you don't understand, 9,000 followers in this game, that's huge. Once they hit 10K, you're gonna care. No, this is when you hit them, because you want to get in sooner and you want to cultivate that talent. Look, I am a crazy person. If anyone didn't know,
this is
like who you become in this industry, is you, your own like talents that aren't necessarily outward showing is your currency in this industry, because it's like, I have a mind for this stuff now, but because I spent years like literally in an attic of a Chinese restaurant hustling a comedy show, and that's just like kind of what you learn, and it's like, it's what you learned, so you just, it becomes what you can offer, and then that becomes big in an industry where talent is king. I am so my father's daughter. It's not even funny. I'm just like an old Persian man being like, the thing you need to understand about your currency. But it is what it is. That's
so true too. It's, you want to get the talent that is like, you know, that is blossoming, you're getting them, and like you want to get them before they blow up. And I've had conversations with like my own father, who's like, hey, like, why don't you check out like Kevin Hart or Conan O'Brien or this? And which, like, I admire their comedy. Like, they're big, they're huge, but I don't care for it. They've already blown up. Like, why would I want to try to get into their circles or anything? Like, I'm very fine with looking for the next like big thing, and then just really, I think, even being there to be like the support or the cheerleader for them, because like within like booking communities and within like stand-up communities, it's like, oh, you want to like look out for X person, or you want to look out for like this person, and it's just a great way to just keep everyone like on the radar of like who you need to like really focus on.
You want to build up the talent you believe in, because like you see it and it's like, someone else might not see it, but if you see it and you have the ability to give stage time or to put them up in any way, it's like, why wouldn't you? Yeah. It's like, you have, you're the person to make it happen, then do it.
Yeah. Let's take one last break and we'll be right back with more Olivia. And we're back. I was thinking back to those. I wasn't there every week for Comedy Palace, but that was like a true hustle. The days that I was helping you, there was like that giant, those speakers that we had to put up every time. And like, just, it was a whole process. Like, it's a true hustle. And I don't know, I respect everyone that is in that game, knowing it's penniless.
Yeah.
But okay, so you're in LA, you get started with the like booking shows, and you have your own show. How do you end up finding like podcasting and stuff like that?
With podcast, okay, so before coming on to Big Money Players, iHeart, the fam here, I was working on podcasts at College Humor, and they were doing a couple of video podcasts, and they were doing it, I think, like within like 2019, maybe part of 2018, but definitely 2019, where I like hopped on as a producer. And I've always have enjoyed like just different, like I think podcasts kind of just open the gates of different perspective, whether it's story or something so personal. And I really enjoyed that a lot. I was working a lot in physical production and I learned a lot, built a lot of my work ethic there. Mom, if you're hearing this, so much work ethic was built in that moment.
Yeah, mama.
I lifted things. I did. I sweat when I was like lifting like C stands and all that. But
that's true.
But I just found podcasts where I found it to be kind of like an adjacent to live comedy a bit, where you still work with talent and individuals. And mind you, it's like on an audio level, but you also are like enthralled and really impressed by their performance. And I really found that to be really cool. There was this podcast I worked on at College Humor. I don't think it's no longer running, but it was called Erotic Book Club. And it was so funny. It was basically reviewing erotic books, and it was by the College Humor cast, and they brought on a special guest. And it was just like seeing these, and I've always, like, I always had fun working on that as a producer, and I found it to be a bit more sensible, rewarding in that. Like, physical production, you're working all hours, 12 plus hours to create something. And mind you, like, in the end, it's really cool and awesome, but I'm like, I think I lost years off my life, like, doing all that, like, heavy labor. And I just, like, going into podcasting, I was like, oh, a lot of the, like, people have such unique perspective and are so like, you can find anything within podcasts to like listen to. I am so impressed by where comedians can bring a performance, whether it's like interview style or it's scripted, unscripted. And it can still turn out to be very enjoyable and like easily consumable.
Right.
Too.
It's such a great place for people to like, and especially comedians. I guess other famous celebrities on podcasts, but whatever.
But they jumped on the train.
Yeah.
Like they,
yeah,
I mean,
they definitely are. Yeah. When they're like,
I think
what,
the majority,
this?
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that there is a pivot with live comedy and then going to podcasting, even though it's very different. It's like one recorded, edited, it's not live, but there is an element where you're giving a microphone to someone that like has an ability to carry not only a conversation, but like make people interested in what they're having to say. And that's a talent, whether it's you're on stage or behind a mic, I think. I think that's why a lot of comedians do either pivot to podcasting or like have that as well, because they've honed that ability to be able to be captivating enough to have an audience.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit annoying now that like literally everyone has one, I'm not interested in making rich people richer. Like I want to know, like I want other kinds of people in the sphere.
Well, it's a great opportunity also to like there's so much talent, like you don't know what someone can bring to the table until you like give them the opportunity to. And like so many, like when Las Culturistas, which is a show on Big Money Players, like Matt and Bowen started that show 4.5, maybe 5 years ago. And it's like, if they hadn't just started doing it, they'd have the opportunity that like Forever Dog gave them, like, at that time, it's not like they were huge names, you know, they were just in the New York comedy scene and they started this podcast, and it's like, you would have never known that these two could have come in and created such a hilarious and fun and joyful podcast unless you just kind of gave them the opportunity. Like, I hate that people are like, well, it has to start with a big name. And it's like, no, like, you actually have to cultivate these shows. Yeah. Like, you can't just put a big name and hope the show's good. It's like, you need to take chances on comedians or talent that, like, have a good idea, and you can see that spark, like, just interacting with them gives you a spark where you're like, this person just fucking kills me in the day to day. That's like, that's where you truly find the gems. Because even if it takes 5 years for them to show up on Big Money Players, they were still popping off. There's a reason they got to Big Money Players. There's a reason we took notice. Like, it's a damn good show.
So, I think you're completely right. And I really hope everyone else internalizes that, like, that has power, or like the ability to make those decisions. Because from the outside perspective, it's kind of overwhelming to see so many people get shot that have, like, that are basically in quote unquote like influencer status. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, it's as if you need the numbers to even be taken seriously in any industry here, not just podcasting, whether you're a filmmaker, a writer, whatever it is. At this point, your social status is so overwhelmingly important. And I see it with my actor friends too. Like, they ask for your handle on social media, being like, how many followers do you have? How can you help us with our brand? It gets overwhelming, because even I'm like self-conscious about like not being that involved in social media, because even though I would like my work to not be tied to it, but it is at this point. It's a frustrating element of the industry, I think. But that just goes to show how important it is to have someone on the other end, on the backside as a producer, being like, even though this person isn't fucking verified, they're still hilarious, and I'm going to cultivate this until people agree with me. So,
it's so true too. It's like, you just have to really put the push and believe in them. And I feel the same as you do, where it's like, you see someone and you're like, oh, they're going to blow up in like in some particular timeline, and you want to get it before, because congratulations, you hit your big break, that's amazing, but it's like, great, I'm glad you're doing this thing, but like, what else can you do?
Sometimes it feels like, knowing what a hustle it is to get anywhere in this industry, that it's like, if I can offer this person one thing that might just make their fucking journey a little bit easier, just get them noticed by a few more people. It's like, it's worth it. I'm not saying like, I'm like, you know, like we're like some God savior. We're like, we've given you the chance. It's like, it's not necessarily sure that like, these things take years to happen. So it's like, when you... what you're offering is just like one other little piece of help that could potentially elevate this talent. It's not saying that you're going to make their career. It's just that you're like, well, I'm going to give you an opportunity to hopefully elevate you a little further to continue your journey to the top, which is like where I personally think you're going. It's like, I think you are just like such a great talent that like, you deserve to be helped. You deserve to be elevated under any circumstance, even if it's just a tiny, maybe if it's just like a half step up. I want to do that for you. Yeah.
And I think it's also important to notice that both of you that work in this sphere, I mean, me included, I'm also a woman of color, but it takes people that are already marginalized, like women of color, people of color, to even recognize that this effort is required, or else you're just falling back on, you're not aware that people need that lift up, if that makes sense. I think it's very related to having an understanding of what it means to even need someone to be like, I believe in you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just giving the resources too. That's just such a huge thing, whether it's just like having industry people there to like see it and have them book on a show where there are people like scouting and looking. It's like, you want to get them on those shows and you want to make sure they get repped. So hopefully the reps give them the resources that they need and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the hustle, man. It's just the hustle.
And that's been Booking and Producing 101.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
I have
moments where I'm like,
let's just like fast forward to, how did you get involved with Big Money Players?
I actually started freelancing, and actually by shout out Hans again, by our friend Hans, who we used to work together at Funny or Die. And just like talking to him and meeting with him. And this was, mind you, like with College Humor, they had major layoffs in the beginning of 2020 where they like, I think they laid off at, like a good sizable amount where only like five people were left. And so Hans was one of the great friends that reached out and was like, hey, like, I would love to talk about your next steps. And we got to talking about podcasts. And then one thing led to another while like freelancing. And I also, too, was freelancing with Just for Laughs, the comedy festival, doing a showcase for them. And so that is basically how I got on board, just talking about, and even just the idea of Big Money Players being told to me, where like the slate was going to be focused on comedians with unique voices and like up and coming. I'm like, yes, sign me up. I love it. Like, I love that. The idea is just like looking for people who are funny and then kind of going back to like, they're getting there. Like you see it and you want to work with them to kind of give that platform and voice to show everyone, being like, hey, these people are hilarious. You all should be listening to them.
God bless Hans.
God bless. Can we title this God Bless?
God bless Hans.
God bless him. Well, it has been a joy to talk to you, Olivia. You have to come back and just
We're in the office, Olivia. We'll be like, "Whoa!"
Oh man. Yeah.
You're going to see me eat all the free shit that's there, all the free snacks.
Oh my gosh.
There are so many times where I'm just like, or back then anyway, I was like huddled next to the cabinet, just like shoveling cereal in my mouth or granola or whatever the hell was there. Those are the days.
There, I think like only one time or two times for a meeting. And I definitely took like three Clif Bars with me.
Yeah. As you should. You're supposed to. It's a rule.
We had such a strong snack game. I had to start doing keto because I was like, you're going to kill yourself here. I had to
interesting keto snacks. You got some interesting keto snacks. And like there was like a matcha drink that I would have sometimes that you would buy. It was pretty good.
I got a little push and pull at the office. I'm just joking. I mean, you'll see. You'll get to the office and you'll be like, does all she do vape in the corner? That's me. I'm just like,
vaping okay, and just another recording. In the corner.
Yeah.
I just vape all day in the office. Jack asks me to stop, but go outside. And I'm like, oh, you think you own me, huh? I'm just like a monster in the office. You'll see. It'll be exciting. Office culture with us is a real fun time because Miles also smokes weed. I vape. Dan also vapes. A lot of weed culture in our office. We're very openly weed culture. Yeah, we're very 420 friendly. And then snacks on deck, baby. Just wait.
Yeah.
And wait till you get your own desk and you just start treating it like a dumpster like everyone else does. We all treat our desks like garbage pails. I don't know why, but we are the messiest like desk office. Like we just throw all our shit everywhere.
It's not that bad. I've seen worse.
Well, okay, sure. But I find ours pretty like, mine is just like covered in bullshit. It's also covered in Post-its because I can remember nothing, probably because I'm vaping all day. And then like Miles, you can literally go and put something on Miles's desk. He'll never notice. It'll be there for years.
I feel like I've done that.
His desk is the actual like that it's like ours is like near the like dumpster, and then Miles' desk, you can put it. That's part of my thing, is I just add stuff to his desk to see if he notices, and he never does.
Until then, until we can have fun in 2022 at the office.
I'm so excited. I'm thinking about what I'm gonna leave on my desk. I'm like,
just wait.
Brainstorming.
It's fun. It's fun to have your own desk. I've never like had that as a freelancer, and then to just like have your own space and you're like, trash it. Let's trash it.
Yeah, I've never had my own desk either, because as a freelancer, you just have to like go into every empty cubicle each time and make it work. And then you have to pack up after a few weeks. But it's nice to have your own desk. I hope to have one someday, maybe. I don't know if that's true. I don't know, actually. This is a conversation for another time.
It's also fun having a standing desk you never utilize as a standing desk.
Oh, I always would utilize it when I was there. Whenever I was there, I would always lift it up. I love that it's a standing desk. I'm standing right now.
I don't stand. Wow. I've never stood in my life.
I'm very impressed by you, Shireen, because...
Shireen's standing culture. I am sitting culture.
I stand every recording. If you guys are listening to this podcast, I've been standing the entire time we record in 2020.
I purposely adjust the chair with the table, but I'm still sitting. Like, even if you have it elevated high to, like, purposely stand, I'll just elevate my chair and be like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to type and just, like, type with all, like,
that's what I'm like. There. I'm like, I am not standing. I will be below the desk if you need me.
That's funny. Well, I very much look forward to hanging out with you in person in 2022. But until then,
where... when we have our vaccination, what is it, like barcodes on our foreheads?
Yeah. I've been vaccinated. Like a little chip, little chippy chip.
Yeah. Scan it. I've been vaccinated, okay?
That's a bitchy apocalypse.
Until that happens, where can the lovely people of the internet find you?
I'm on Instagram at Olivia Newton Juan. It's like Olivia Newton John, but John is Juan translated. And then Twitter handle. I feel like I'm just at Aguilar Olivia. I think that's it because I tried to do my same as Instagram and then they wouldn't allow it. They wouldn't allow it.
Bullshit.
I know.
That's that's my struggle. I just added a 666 and it ends up working out. But yeah, it's been lovely talking to you.
It has. Thank you for doing the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. This was so much fun.
Yay, I'm glad you have fun. That's what we aim. We aim for our guests to either
have our guests to suffer.
We want them to have fun. Oh, sometimes you had fun? I want them to like...
Then we will start over again.
I think I either want our guests to have fun or like some type of deep emotional revelation. So I'm glad you had fun.
Did you cry at all?
No, I cried. I muted myself and just cried a little bit in between stuff, in between childhood talks.
That's great. I love that about you. I love that you're so chill like that. Just taught to be a model minority from day one. Like, don't even cry. If you do cry, mute yourself on Zoom, please.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's what you gotta do.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter, doing nothing.
And until next time, keep hustling, I guess.
Yeah, keep hustling. Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.